It's been 25 years since the Royal Commission into Deaths in Custody report was handed down. But according to research by the University of Technology Sydney, there have only been two successful prosecutions of custodial police officers involved. Since the report was handed down in 1991, the number of deaths in custody has climbed to 449. UTS held a forum last week to evaluate the Royal Commission's impact. Roderick Chambers was there and found that most of the report's recommendations have still not been implemented.
Although the Deaths in Custody Royal Commission's findings were handed down 25 years ago, then 14% of the prison population was Indigenous, and today it's 28%. For women, the figure is a third, and for children, it is half. Clearly, things are not getting better. And figures show that a first imprisonment is likely to lead to a further imprisonment. So the high rate for Indigenous children is alarming, according to Amnesty International's Roxanne Moore, who herself has Aboriginal heritage.
Across Australia, Indigenous children are 24 times more likely to be imprisoned than non-Indigenous children. And across Australia, Indigenous kids make up 6% of the total youth population, but over half of the imprisonment population. In Queensland, this is actually higher, so it's almost two-thirds of kids in detention are Indigenous.
This is indeed a frightening figure that bodes ill for the future. But we always hear tough law and order messages from state premiers. Roxanne Moore does not think it's the right way to help Indigenous children.
We know that tough on crime doesn't work. We know that detention is not a place for kids. You know, and Amnesty's message with our campaign is that for kids to flourish, they need to be in community. They need to have that support and encouragement and nurturing that they need to grow and lead fulfilling lives. They don't need to be locked up for these minor crimes, you know, like stealing. Like, I think that we need to look at early intervention and diversion and how to actually stop that cycle of imprisonment. So, you know, if a kid gets into the justice system for stealing like a $2 cigarette lighter or something, you know, they're then part of that system and it's really hard for them to break out of it. I think another one of the big things is that a lot of Indigenous kids don't know their rights when they come into contact with the police, and they really need access to legal assistance at an early stage. And what we're saying is we really need funding for Aboriginal legal services who can provide that culturally appropriate service for Indigenous kids to break that cycle.
Recommendations from the Deaths in Custody Royal Commission have not been implemented. A simple phone call to the Victorian Aboriginal Legal Service after arrest has made a big difference in Victoria on deaths in custody figures for that state.
Yeah, the Custody Notification Service in Victoria, there have been no deaths in custody since that program has been in place, and yet they're still struggling to get funding for it. So I think that's a really good example of how we need to get governments to, you know, really look at what's working and commit to it.
At every state election, we hear about the law and order agenda that we need to be tough on crime, have mandatory sentencing, zero tolerance. But the effect on this is that a very high proportion of the Indigenous population gets locked up for petty crime. In the Northern Territory, they have what they call paperless arrests, which is a practice where 70% of Indigenous people are arrested. So is law and order compatible with justice? Associate Professor Dr. Talia Anthony of the UTS Faculty of Law thinks not.
Yeah, I think the pillar of our justice system really is individualised justice, so looking at each person and trying to address their needs and making punishment appropriate. Law and order, by contrast, is very much a general wholesale approach to crime, assuming that every criminal is the same, every criminal has the same background. And I think with that in mind, the Royal Commission tried to counter that view by showing that these 99 individual people it examined did have a background, did have a family, did have a community, and required a response that was much more considerate than what they saw when they were thrown in the police cell or put in prison.
A lot of bad feeling surrounds the Palm Island case in Queensland with the death of Murujie Dumujie, and Indigenous people still feel that justice has not been done. Roxanne Moore explains how Palm Island people feel about this process.
I think on Palm Island, it's a really complex history. I mean, Palm Island started out as a penal colony and people have been brought to Palm Island from all over Australia even. And so a lot of people are really disconnected from their culture, from their family, families, and that's carried through history. And then, as you mentioned, there was the horrific death in custody of Murungi Dumuji and the riots and the violence that followed for that community. I mean, I think justice for Palm Island, like, I can't speak for Palm Island people, but I think that we really need to look at Indigenous-led solutions. I spent time with women on Palm Island at a community forum, and there are so many strong women who are leading the way in culturally appropriate programs, from mental health to substance abuse to education and employment and justice. And I think that it comes back to our people. We know the answers. We know what works for our community. So why are we continuing with these top-down solutions rather than listening to communities and actually supporting communities to do the things that they know that they need?
Amnesty International's Roxanne Moore, ending that report by Roderick Chambers.